With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you wish to ask. And then she can either type a response or use their voice-to-text feature, and MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy. It's something that you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. And this is something that Ethan and I had been thinking about doing with our parents. We have this podcasting equipment, so we wanted to find a way for them to tell their story. But I love this because it's so regimented. They send them a question every week, and it just makes it really easy and turnkey. And it just seems like a great way for us to get our parents' stories down so that our children and our children's children can have them. So if you're interested, check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG at checkout for 15% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG for 15% off today. Are you ready to lose weight? With Effecty, getting access to powerful GLP-1 weight loss medications has never been easier or more affordable. Effecty offers compounded semaglutide, the same active ingredients as the popular name brands, but for up to 80% less. These medications work by regulating appetite and blood sugar, helping you lose weight in a sustainable, science-backed way. Getting started is so simple. Just fill out a short medical questionnaire, then connect with a licensed provider through a quick chat-based telehealth consultation. If you're eligible, your prescription gets shipped straight to your door. No hassle, no waiting rooms. With transparent pricing, no hidden fees, and no membership required, Effecty is committed to making proven weight loss treatments accessible to everyone. Effecty gave me the opportunity to try their service out, and I have to say, it is just as easy as they say it is. I filled out the questionnaire, and within days, a package arrived at my door filled with everything I needed and detailed instructions. Their website also tells you everything you need to know, and you can always chat with your healthcare provider. It really is that simple and convenient. So if you're ready to level up your weight loss game, my listeners can now get $50 off of GLP-1 weight loss treatments at Effecty.com with code ATTWG at checkout. That's Effecty.com, EFFECTY.com, and use the code ATTWG to get $50 off your first month of GLP-1 weight loss treatment. No hassles, no memberships, and no hidden fees. So get started today. We sleep better when we sleep cool. As the weather is getting warmer, staying cool while we sleep will be top of mind. Organic and natural bedding sleeps cooler than cheaper synthetic alternatives, and they last longer too. A fresh season calls for a fresh start, and that includes your bed. From seriously soft organic cotton sheets to breathable silk and luxurious down duvets, Avocado Green's bedding makes it easy to reset your space sustainably. Perfect for hot sleepers in warmer months, Avocado Green sheets and duvet inserts are naturally breathable and help regulate temperature, so you sleep cool, dry, and comfortable all night long. Avocado bedding is thoughtfully designed and expertly crafted for lasting durability. From reinforced stitching to premium long staple organic fibers, every detail is made to stand the test of time, wash after wash, season after season. We sleep better when we sleep cool, so head to avocadomattress.com today to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better.
Darkcast Network, the light shines brightest on our indie podcasts.
Hey everyone, it's Kona here. All right, so this is what's going on. We had a bit of an unexpected break again, and it's kind of related to our last one. So if you're a regular listener, you've heard about my shingles saga, and that was preceded by my poison ivy saga. And basically, all of that happened. We went on vacation. We got an episode out while we were gone. But then we came back and immediately came down with COVID. And, you know, I thought, hey, my immune system has been in shambles since the end of April. Maybe I should look into that. You know, COVID hit Ethan and I kind of hard and we like could not talk. So there was not going to be an episode and I was just in no space to like get something up. Right now, I am trying to take a bit of a break and try to, you know, reduce some of the stress in my life in hopes that like things like this don't keep on happening. But I am writing and working behind the scenes. So this is what we're going to do. This week, we have the lovely Sarai bringing us two stories of missing people. These are the cases of the Springfield Three and Dior Kunz Jr. These are both unsolved cases that recently had anniversaries, so we thought that it would be a great time to bring these back up to the forefront a little bit. Also coming up on July 10th and 11th, we do have two episodes from our Darkcast family, and we are featured in one of them. I don't know which one they put our story in, but it is called Cruel Summer. And this is when several of the podcasts got together from the network and told different true crime and paranormal stories that take place during the summer. So we are featured in that, and we will be releasing those episodes on our feed on July 10th and 11th. What I find completely hilarious, and I had no idea until I was putting this episode together, is that Sarai actually started out her episode with a very similar apology for being gone. Like, it is tough out here, y'all. It's difficult. But we really, really appreciate you sticking with us. So thank you again for all of your support, as always. And for now, enjoy this episode of Freaky AF.
Hey y'all, welcome to another episode of the Freaky as Fuck podcast. I'm your host, Sarai, and I just wanted to thank you all for your patience while I took some time off to take care of myself. Being an indie podcaster is tough, y'all. This entire operation is being carried out by my lonesome, so there are going to be a few times where I just need to take a step back to take care of myself, and I hope y'all can understand that, and please make sure that you're looking after yourselves too. Times are definitely tough right now, and so much shit is going on in the world, and with that on top of the struggles and stressors of everyday life, it's important to look after your mental health, alright? It's 100% okay not to be okay, and if you need to take a day or two to get all your eggs in a basket, please do so. Don't overwork yourself. Don't stress yourself out too much. Everything will be just as you left it when you get back, I promise. So for today's episode, I wanted to discuss two unsolved missing persons cases that have just recently had their anniversaries. One of those being the case of the Springfield Three, the disappearance of Suzanne Streeter, Stacy McCall, and Cheryl Levitt. This is a case that shook the once quiet, sleepy town of Springfield, Missouri to its core. June 6, 1992. Childhood friends 19-year-old Suzanne Streeter, also known as Susie, and 18-year-old Stacy McCall graduated from Kickapoo High School in Springfield. In celebration of their newfound freedom, the two spent the evening attending several graduation parties. Susie and Stacy show up to the first party in Battlefield, Missouri on Coach Drive at around 8:30 p.m. Meanwhile, at Susie's home, her mother, Cheryl Levitt, is spending her night refurnishing an armoire. Cheryl would receive a call from a friend at approximately 9:30 p.m. that night, and they'd talk on the phone until around 11:15 p.m. At 10:30, Stacy would make a phone call to her mother, Janice McCall, to inform her that the two girls had abandoned their plans to drive to Branson that night, as they were planning to attend a water park there the following day with a group of friends. Instead, Susie and Stacy decided that they'd stay the night at a friend's house and would make the 40 to 45 minute drive to Branson the next morning. When they'd arrived at this friend's house, however, the girls decided last minute that they were instead going to be staying the night at another friend's house, Janelle Kirby, who was to be accompanying the girls to Branson the next day. When they arrived at Janelle's, Susie and Stacy found the home to be a bit crowded, as Janelle had family coming in from out of town to see her walk the stage at graduation, so all of the guest bedrooms were already occupied. Their sleeping arrangements would have been that they'd have to sleep on the floor in the living room, and it's at this point that Susie and Stacy decided that they'd probably be much more comfortable sleeping on Susie's brand new waterbed that she'd received as a graduation present. So once again, their plans change, and at around 2 a.m., Susie tells Stacy to follow her to her home at 1717 East Delmar Street. They told Janelle that they'd call her in the morning. At 7:30 a.m. on June 7th, the next morning, Janelle never received a call from the girls. She tries to reach them at Susie and Cheryl's home, but all of her calls go unanswered. After not being able to get in touch with anyone all morning, Janelle and her boyfriend Mike decided to pay the home a visit at around 12:30 p.m. When they get there, they notice that all three cars are sitting in the driveway. They walked up to the front door of the home and noticed that the glass porch light shade had shattered. They checked the front door, and it was unlocked, which apparently wasn't an uncommon occurrence, as Springfield was considered to be a safe, quiet town during this time, so the couple didn't really think anything of it. They entered the home to find what seemed to be a pretty normal scene, other than the fact that the TV set was left on, which prompted them to think that maybe the women had gone out for a quick stroll or something of the sorts. While Janelle and Mike were inside the home, the phone rang. Janelle answered the phone, thinking it could have been Cheryl, Susie, or Stacy, but on the other end was a male, and he was making some very lewd comments. Thinking it must have been some kind of gross prank call, Janelle quickly hung up. Not long after, the phone rang again, but this time, Janelle let it go to voicemail. Not knowing what else to do, the couple left the home after sweeping up the shards of glass that was left on the front porch. By this time, Janice McCall hadn't heard from her daughter since the previous night, which worried her a little bit because Stacy was always very good about checking in and letting her parents know where she was. She also found it alarming that neither Cheryl or Susie was answering their phone. She calls the friend's house where Susie and Stacy were supposed to have stayed the night, and they inform her that the girls actually went to Janelle's instead. Not having a way to contact Janelle, Janice was forced to just wait it out until she heard back from either Stacy, Susie, or Cheryl. At around 5:30 p.m., Janice receives a call from a friend who notifies her that no one has neither seen or spoken to the three women all day. And at 9 p.m., Janice decides to go to Cheryl and Susie's home with her husband. When they arrive at the house on Delmar Street, she sees the three cars in the driveway. She walks into the home, which was still unlocked, and notices the women's belongings lined up on the stairs. Janice also notices that the family's Yorkshire Terrier, Cinnamon, seemed to be a bit agitated than normal. She walks into Susie's bedroom where she finds Stacy's neatly folded clothes and her jewelry. The only thing that she couldn't account for of her daughter's was the shirt that she was wearing on the night of graduation and her underwear. She also noticed that Susie's bed seemed to have been slept in. Upon closer examination of the women's belongings, Janice noticed that Stacy's migraine medication had been left behind, as well as Cheryl's and Susie's cigarettes, which raised some alarms as she knew Cheryl and Susie to be avid smokers. And it's at this point that Janice decides to notify someone of the women's disappearance. By the time that responding officers arrived to investigate the missing women, between 10 to 20 people had already gone through the home and possibly inadvertently destroyed major key evidence. Investigators took note of the three cars still in the driveway, which were all locked, and they were able to find the keys to their vehicles inside of the home. They found Cheryl's bed to have also been disturbed and noticed an overturned book as well as her glasses in her bedroom, suggesting that she had been interrupted while reading. Officers also noticed damp washcloths with makeup on them in the laundry hamper, suggesting that the women were getting ready for bed moments before they vanished, which would also explain why Stacy's nightshirt and underwear were missing. These must have been the clothes that she was planning on wearing to bed. Janelle did notify the police of the strange phone call from earlier that day and also noted of the second call that went to voicemail. Janice was able to listen to the voice message that was left on the answering machine, and it was just as lewd and filled with sexual innuendos as the phone call that Janice had received. But nothing would ever come of this information. It's to my understanding that the voice message somehow later gets accidentally erased. Police were unable to uncover any new information during their walkthrough of the home, and that Sunday, officers locked it up and left a note on the front door for Cheryl to call the police department to cancel the missing persons report. But that call would never be made. The case would be filed as a missing persons with foul play suspected, and the FBI is called to assist with the case on June 9th. Within days of Susie, Stacy, and Cheryl's disappearance, more than 20,000 missing person posters were put up all around Springfield. The case gained nationwide attention when 48 Hours did a feature episode on it just days after their disappearance and would later be profiled on an episode of America's Most Wanted, as well as Maury Povich and Oprah. Community-wide searches were done, divers inspected Lake Springfield and a stretch of the James River, and the entire community worked tirelessly to find the three missing women. Police looked into every tip and theory that they received, but no concrete evidence would ever come to light. Numbers of theories have been discussed as to what happened to Susie, Stacy, and Cheryl that night, but I have chosen not to discuss them in this episode today. Instead, I'd like to direct you to an amazing podcast series that is dedicated solely to this case. Its creator, Ann Roderick Jones, actually grew up in Springfield during this time and was just 12 years old when the women vanished. I got a lot of my information from her podcast, and she does an amazing job at discussing the theories and possible suspects, and she even includes interviews with some of those involved with the case. The series is called The Springfield Three, A Small Town Disappearance, and you can listen to it on whatever podcast listening platform you're listening to this episode on. I'll also have a link included in the show notes. The 30th anniversary of this case was this past July 7th. Stacy McCall was 18 years old when she went missing. She would be 48 years old today. She is a Caucasian female with dark blonde hair, blue eyes, and freckles on her face. She has an off-center cleft in her chin and has birthmarks on her chin, near her lip, and on her right arm. Both of her ears are pierced. Suzanne Streeter was 19 years old when she went missing. She would be 49 years old today. She is a Caucasian female with bleach blonde hair, brown eyes, and has a small tumor on the left corner of her mouth, which gives the appearance that she has something inside her mouth. She also has a scar on her upper right forearm. She's described as having large teeth with no previous dental work, and both of her ears are pierced, her left being pierced twice, and has a hole in the upper portion of her ear. She also goes by the name Susie. Cheryl Levitt, maiden name Williams, was 47 years old when she went missing. She would be 78 years old today. She is a Caucasian female with bleach blonde hair, brown eyes, and freckles on her neck and upper chest. Both of her ears are pierced. If you have any information regarding these three women's whereabouts or disappearance, please contact the Springfield, Missouri Police Department or Springfield Crime Stoppers. This next disappearance is that of 2-year-old Dior Coons Jr. On July 9th, 2015, Jessica Mitchell and her fiancé, Vernal Dior Coons, decided to take their 2-year-old son, Dior Coons Jr., on a visit to Timber Creek Campground in Idaho. Their site was close to the Stone Reservoir, and the family was planning on doing some fishing while out there. The family was accompanied by Jessica's grandfather, Robert Walton, and a friend of his, Isaac Reinwand. The family would leave for Timber Creek no later than 7:10 that evening and would arrive at the campsite at around 9:30. Upon arrival to the campground, Jessica and Vernal set up chairs and started a fire in the fire pit while Walton relaxed inside of the camper that they had brought. They'd spend the rest of the night sitting around the fire. The next morning, breakfast was made, and the couple continued to set up anything that they were unable to the night prior. Jessica and Vernal would leave the campsite for town to get gas at around 10:30, 11 a.m. They'd arrive back at camp shortly after 1 p.m. Isaac had set off on his own to do some fishing. At around 2 p.m., Jessica and Vernal decided to go off to inspect the surrounding area of their campsite. Jessica claims that she announced to her grandfather that they were going to have a look around and that they were leaving baby Dior behind since it was nearing his nap time. However, Walton has maintained that he never heard Jessica, and he was unaware that he was supposed to be watching over him. As Jessica and Vernal were walking off towards the stream, baby Dior supposedly went running after them. However, when Jessica asked if he'd rather go fishing with them or stay with Grandpa, baby Dior decided to stay and went running back towards Robert. Later on, Robert would say that he last saw baby Dior playing near the creek. The couple was gone for approximately 30 minutes, and when they arrived back at the campsite, baby Dior was nowhere to be found. The party searched the campsite and the surrounding area for 20 minutes before Vernal decided that he was going to take his truck down the road to see if he could find any sign of Dior. After not finding anything, he returned to the campsite, where he helped search for another 10 to 15 minutes before getting back in his truck and making a second trip down the road. Jessica makes the call to 911 at 2:36 p.m.
What's the address of your emergency?
I'm actually camping in Ledore, just outside of Ledore. My two-year-old son, we can't find him.
How long has he been missing?
About an hour.
An hour?
Yeah.
Are you by water?
Yes.
Do you know which campground you're in?
It's Stone Reservoir, Timber Creek.
Stone Reservoir?
Yeah, or Timber Creek.
Hold on. We need search and rescue. Jessica? Jessica?
Yeah?
What's your son's name?
Mark.
Okay, what is he wearing?
He was wearing cowboy boots, a blue pair, like pajama pants, and a camel jacket. And he's got shaggy blonde hair.
Is your husband calling too?
Like, all down where we were camping at, and we can't find him at all.
Okay, we need you to stay within cell service. We've got people going on the way.
Thank you.
Multiple searches of the surrounding area of the campsite have been conducted by foot, horseback, ATV, helicopters, and by drones. Canine units have been brought in to sniff out evidence, and private investigators have conducted their own searches of the area, but no solid evidence of Dior's whereabouts have ever been produced. Later on, cadaver dogs have previously hit on 5 different locations, including a site just 3/4 of a mile from the campsite. After several inconsistencies and statements were found in the accounts of both Jessica Mitchell and Vernal Dior Coons Sr., they were officially named suspects in the disappearance of their son in January 2016. Lemhi County Sheriff Lynn Bowerman stated,
"I believe his parents are hiding something. There is no doubt in my mind. We gave them every opportunity to explain if it was an accident of some kind, and they haven't."
Neither Jessica or Vernal have ever been charged in connection to Dior's disappearance. In July 2016, a search was conducted of Jessica and Vernal's Idaho Falls apartment, where investigators uncovered the camouflage jacket that Dior was reported wearing on the day he disappeared. No explanation has ever been made public as to how the camo jacket ended up back at their apartment. The family later hired their own private investigator, Philip Klein of Klein Investigations and Consulting. However, he was ultimately fired after he later announced that he also suspected Jessica and Vernal in Dior's disappearance. The family made several attempts to take Klein to court. However, the lawsuits were ultimately dismissed, with Klein winning every time. The final lawsuit was in October 2019. Isaac Reinwand, the friend of Robert Walton, has never been made a suspect, and his story has remained consistent since the initial report was filed. Robert Walton, Jessica's grandfather and the last person to see Dior alive, would unfortunately pass in the summer of 2019 after battling cancer. Jessica Walton and Vernal Coons would call off their engagement shortly after Dior went missing. They've since been remarried and have moved states. In an October 2021 interview that Jessica's mother, Trina Bates Clegg, did with EastIdahoNews.com, she said,
"I want closure so bad for baby Dior. You know, I mean, if he isn't with us anymore, I would like him properly laid to rest. I would like to know, you know, not necessarily do I want to know what happened, but I just want the closure of it. This little boy didn't do anything to anybody. He was loving. His smile and his laugh brought so much joy to us that I'm like, there's nothing that this little boy could have ever done to deserve anything that happened to him."
The 7-year anniversary of this case was just 2 days ago, on July 10th. Dior J. Coons Jr. was just 2 years old on the day that he went missing on July 10, 2015. He would be 9 years old today. He is a Caucasian male with blonde hair, brown eyes, and a birthmark on the back of his neck. Dior was last seen wearing a camouflage print jacket, blue pajama pants, green and black checkered socks, and brown camouflage cowboy boots. If you have any information regarding the whereabouts of Dior or his disappearance, please contact the Lemhi County Sheriff's Department in Idaho. If you enjoy this episode, please be sure to leave a 5-star rating or review on your favorite podcast listening platform. If you have the means to further support the show, you can do so by donating to our coffee or by buying yourself something nice from the merch store. Links to both places will be in the show notes and can also be found on my website, www.freakyafpodcast.com. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at freakyafpod or shoot me an email at freakyafpodcast@gmail.com. Be sure to come back here next week for some more spooky shit. Bye!
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. It prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. information.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.